This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello and welcome to Friday's edition of the Woman's Hour podcast with me, Emma Barnett. Now, the Christmas cinema battle is on. In one corner, Little Women, and the other, Star Wars: The Rise of Skywalker. One is expressly targeted at women, and the other used to be seen as one for the boys. But since the Star Wars saga began in 1977, how has the representation of women changed in one of the biggest sci-fi franchises of all time? And why? Anna Smith is a film critic and host of the feminist film podcast Girls on Film. Victoria Upton is a member of the Norwich Star Wars fan club. And Gabriella Geisinger is the deputy movies editor at Digital Spy. Welcome to all of you. Anna, if I start with you and ask, has Star Wars come a long way in terms of female characters and perhaps appeal to female cinemagoers?
I think so. It's a case sometimes of two steps forward and one step back. I think we've always had kind of strong women in command characters. Obviously, Princess Leia, General Leia, is a strong female character, but at the same time, she was kind of objectified and subjected to sexual harassment, actually, in Return of the Jedi.
Now, what was it about that bikini and that whole look that makes you say that?
Well, it was more about actually her interactions and also in Empire Strikes Back with Harrison Ford's character Han Solo, that she's basically telling him to stop and no and actually, you know, stop flirting with me, and ends up submitting and kissing him. So to me, I think that was quite problematic. And obviously, I'm viewing it through a modern post-Me Too lens. But it's kind of interesting that I don't think you would see that in Star Wars now. And I think the Last Jedi in 2017 was much more progressive and a much more exciting example of military women working together, having conversations with each other, not just being the love interest and being far more than that.
Is that how you see this, Gabriella, or do you think there's still a long way to go?
No, I definitely agree. I think when we look at Leia as a character, she's come now to represent, I mean, you go to any protest and there are pictures with Carrie Fisher's face being held up by countless protesters because she has become such an icon for resistance and rebellion and striving to fight against forces of oppression. But that's definitely something that she's become.
We should just say at this point, for people who don't like Star Wars or perhaps never have engaged with it, I mean, that's the thing. This is a whole battle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Against adversity, the whole hope against horror. That's the bigger backdrop.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the things that makes the franchise so successful and touch so many people over time, is that's something that every generation must battle, is that oppression, whatever they're facing. And I think Star Wars really taps into that feeling. And I would definitely agree, though, that the contemporary saga have done much better by their female characters, especially when you talk about strong military women. You have General Holdo played by Laura Dern, who's also in Little Women. So you see, you know, it's interesting to see these faces as they kind of come around in these different franchises.
Let's bring in superfan, if I'm allowed to call you that, Victoria, at this point. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why are you so into this franchise?
I like Star Wars. I think it's something I can relate to as like a child, but it's also something now that my children have grown up with as well. And I think that it is bringing the younger audience in. I mean, there's more women characters in
there for them to look up to, perhaps.
As the films have progressed. I mean, all little girls like princesses, and this is an alternative princess for younger girls than the Disney princesses. And I think that Leia is quite a strong character. And as the films have gone on, and we've mentioned before, she has all sort of we've evolved with her. We've seen her grow.
Do you dress up as characters?
Yes, I dress up as a Mandalorian, and I also dress up as Nine Num, which is a male character, but it is great fun.
Okay, I'm just trying to get an image there of what your get-up is. I'm not sure everyone here in the studio. Are you a dresser-upper, Gabriella?
I'm not.
You're
no.
not. Okay. And what about you, Victoria? Victoria, you said, excuse me, Anna.
I'm more likely to dress up as Catwoman or something. I'm not really a Star Wars dresser.
You're not? Okay, fine. I just like to get a vision here of what's going on. I mean, there is out there, though, some issue, isn't there, around whether it's gone too far for the diehard, hardcore fans of the film, which probably they self-define like that, don't they, Gabriella? They're in that sort of stereotypical sci-fi, white blokes who think it's gone too feminist. What would you say to them?
I think one of the great things about Star Wars is it takes place in a galaxy totally alien to ours, and it's got a place for everybody. And I think that's when you look at the characters that inhabit the world of Star Wars, they are so varied. You've got human looking people, and you've got aliens and octopus and Mandalorian. You've got this whole wide array of characters. So it's very easy to find a place for yourself. And I think Oscar Isaac, who plays Poe Dameron, has said that one of the things that's great about Star Wars is there is an ambiguity in there, and that allows people to find themselves. So I think there's always been a space for people that don't fit into that white male category, and now it's just becoming a little more explicit, which I think is a wonderful thing.
But some people don't think that, do they, Anna?
Yes, you do see on Twitter people saying, hey, it's only a movie, when someone makes a feminist point about Star Wars. But this is a movie that they themselves are very invested in and get quite cross about. And I think having a woman at the centre of the story now, Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, is a tremendous step forward, and one that actually probably little boys don't think anything different of. And that's what we want to see. And that's what we were talking about on Girls on Film, is thinking of the new generations. And, you know, a great example. But people who are sort of entrenched in it and unfortunately a minority of the super fans are getting cross about feminism gone mad.
But just because I was talking there about what's on at the films, you know, I went to see Little Women yesterday, and it's safe to say there were not a lot of guys in the cinema watching it. You know, what about the idea that there should be or can still be films that are targeted at one gender? Because Star Wars was always seen as a preserve of men.
I think that's perfectly fine. I think there's room for everything. But what we want generally in cinema is greater equality all around. We want more choices for women and for men. But also, I think, as Gabriella suggests, I think men and women have always enjoyed Star Wars, and there are a lot of female fans, and now they're just being better served.
Okay. But in terms of then the idea that everything needs to appeal to everyone, because it doesn't work in the sense of there's no uproar from women if there's a really strong guy character in Little Women, is
right.
there?
I think that's just because of the society we live in. We live in a patriarchal society, and so women are expected to bend and find places for themselves in other media that are made for men. And it hasn't been the other way around yet. And I think now we're starting to see that. But I will also say that at Digital Spy, you know, our readers tend to be more skewed toward that demographic because we write a lot about Star Wars and Marvel movies. And that's the audience you typically associate with those. But then when we write pieces that appeal to or give voice to LGBTQ fans and women, we get such a great feedback from that because those fans are out there. They just need to be lifted up and given that voice.
But there has been some hate, hasn't there? Some online hate directed towards those who are involved in these latest incarnations of the film.
Especially Kelly Marie Tran suffered quite a lot of harassment online and social media.
She plays
Rose Tico, who had quite a major role in The Last Jedi. She was buddied up with Finn, and they went on a bunch of adventures. And she really, for me, Rose really embodies what Star Wars is about. It's about love and hope in the face of despair and keeping that. And she says, you know, we're not going to win fighting what we hate, but by saving what we love. I think that is so intrinsic to Star Wars, and she really embodied that.
But she got a lot of hate.
Yeah, because she's a woman of color.
And what was that hate? Was it about the fact that she was in the film or the role?
I think, you know, it's tricky to say because so many fans will say, oh, I didn't like the character because she's a Mary Sue, which was a lot of the criticism Rey had in the beginning as well. But I think those comments are thin veils for feelings of misogyny and racism that so many people may unconsciously have.
Let's bring Victoria back in at this point. I mean, when you think of being a keen member of Norwich Star Wars fan club, when you think of the new incarnations of this film and those characters and then some of them receiving hate, what would you say to that?
I think every character's there for a reason, and every character is there, it brings something to it. And if you take one of the characters out, I think you're going to lose the dynamics.
And in terms of what we were just saying there about the younger generation, in terms of what Anna was saying about little boys now seeing the female characters as normal, do you think that has already become the case?
I think so. I think if you think of New Hope, there was only like the main character is Leia, and now go forward to 2017 to The Last Jedi, there are several characters, whether it be Captain Phasma on the dark side, or you've still got Leia, and as you say, Vice Admiral Hado, and everything. You've got some strong characters on both sides, and I think that it's reflecting society and how society has changed over the years.
Do you dress up as the same characters as your children, or do you have clearly demarked roles?
No, we're obviously we can dress up as what characters we want. My daughter actually dresses up as Leia or an officer, so she's both a character of the dark side and the light side. And my other daughter, she dresses up as a biker scout.
Okay, good to know. In terms of what Victoria's saying there about every character playing a role, if we just zoom out a bit on sci-fi as a whole, Anna, do you think that other areas of sci-fi need to get with the programme, a bit like Star Wars?
Definitely. I mean, it's always been quite male-dominated. We've had some wonderful examples like Ripley and Aliens, who are an exception to that rule. But I am quite encouraged about the future. We've also seen like the Marvel series, if we include kind of comic book things. We've got the Black Widow film coming up. And I think generally the studios and the filmmakers are more conscious of the need to have better representation right across the board, and that includes more female characters.
And then that brings you to the question, though, is it all just about marketing?
That's part of it. But, you know, money talks. And that's why we urge people to go and see films centering around women and made by women.
Money talks. Final word from you, Camilla.
Yeah, it does. But I also think it's cyclical, right? So if you invest in diverse storytelling behind the camera and in front of the camera, people will come to those movies. So if the studios invest in telling those stories, then people will come see them.
Obviously, I have to end by saying may the force be with you over this Christmas period. Exactly. Anna Smith, Victoria Upton, Gabriella Geisinger, thank you to all of you. Now, a more personal question for you. Is your pelvic floor feeling too tight? And I'm talking more specifically at this point to our female listeners. We will get onto the male experience as well. But we hear a lot more these days about loose pelvic floors and incontinence, especially post-childbirth. But we hear a lot less about problems in the opposite direction, where women feel like they can't bring their pelvic floor down. To discuss this feeling, which can be tough to articulate, and what perhaps you can do to help yourself or if you know someone else who's having this, I'm joined by Marta Kinsella, pelvic health and rehabilitation physiotherapist, and Dr. Maggie Blott, a consultant obstetrician at the Royal Free Hospital. Marta, if I come to you first, good morning.
Good morning, hello.
What is a too tight pelvic floor, if you were to describe it for someone who may be listening who feel like this could be talking to them?
Sure. Well, the pelvic floor muscles, to start with, they're at the front, right at the front of the pubic bone, and they go all the way back and they hold up the pelvic organ. So it's very important to do the pelvic floor. But sometimes you have a hypertonic pelvic floor, which is it's the state of the muscles in the pelvic floor, and they become a little bit too tense and sometimes a little bit weak with a little bit of less range. And you can call it like an overactive pelvic floor or high tone, non-relaxing pelvic floor. If you can kind of think of it as a different muscle in the body, something like the shoulder, it can become a little bit too weak or too tight, and sometimes it needs a little bit of stretching or lengthening or releasing.
So it feels like
the pelvic floor.
I was just going to say, and it's that feeling that perhaps you can't bring it down.
Absolutely. That could be one of the triggers or one of the symptoms where you become a little bit aware of the pelvic floor. And one of those triggers could be that the pelvic floor is quite active, quite tense, or you could have different symptoms such as like lower back pain or hip pain, and that can affect the heightened awareness of the pelvic floor as well.
And in your line of work as a physiotherapist in this area, you do what if you meet people who are having this particular problem?
Absolutely. So it's all down to pelvic health, and we've got pelvic health physiotherapists, and we'll take an objective and a thorough assessment of the patient. And then what we'll see is whether the pelvic floor is weak or it needs a little bit of lengthening or stretching before we do some of the squeezing exercises. And what we do in the assessment is it's a multifactorial approach. So it's not just the pelvic floor. That's just a symptom more often than not. We'll look at the manual therapy, the internal, external muscles, and then we'll see what the triggers are, the symptoms and the problems, and then we can go from there. So we can go down the education, the stretch route. Sometimes the breath work is the first protocol that we do, because some of the patients might be presenting with like a prolonged position, and or one of the triggers could be anything from IBS to lower back pain to hip pain, and we try and reduce those muscles or relax those muscles before we do any of the manual therapy.
Let's just bring in Dr. Block here. The idea that you can't bring this down, we've heard a lot more from the NHS as well. There's an NHS app around breathing and making sure you do your, especially your pelvic exercises before you have a baby, because of it becoming perhaps too slack or too loose afterwards. I'm probably not using any of the right terminology. But the idea that it's too tense is something that perhaps people maybe haven't been able to articulate.
Yes, good morning. This is two-type pelvic floor is a rather complex condition, which is poorly understood, I think, both by professionals and women, and will present in many different ways. The poorly functioning, the weak pelvic floor we've known about for a long time. And, of course, physiotherapy is vital in terms of before, during and after pregnancy and helping women maintain the strength of their pelvic floor to prevent later conditions like urinary incontinence and prolapse. A two-type pelvic floor would most often present to a gynaecologist in terms of psychosexual problems like vaginismus, difficulty with intercourse, difficulty being able to relax to allow penetration. All those things are very real.
Yes.
And I think a knowledge of how the pelvic floor works, I think women really don't understand how what their pelvic floor looks like or how it works.
No, I mean, I Googled an image of it before I came on today to actually have a look at this set of muscles, because you don't even, I mean, I was literally thinking of it as a shelf within me, but it is a set of muscles that are complex.
It is. It's a complex set of muscles. Their function really is to support the organs above the pelvic floor, and they maintain continence in that way. So if your bladder muscle drops or slips down, that is what starts the process of stress incontinence.
But is it right to say in the UK, because it's much more well documented in France, that once you've had, especially after having a baby, you don't just get a load of physio or a load of gynecological support, do you?
No, you don't.
It's not available on the NHS.
Correct. So in France, I think I'm right in saying that most women who have had a baby will have 5 or 6 sessions with a physiotherapist immediately after
a women's health physio.
Women's health physiotherapist, yes. Somebody who's expert in teaching women about pelvic health. And it's a real cost-saving initiative, because, of course, those women who understand and can strengthen their pelvic floor will go on to have far fewer problems in later life. In the UK, we do have a physiotherapy service, a women's health physiotherapy service, but it's very sparse. We could do much better by bringing in many more physiotherapists in the postnatal period.
It's like a weird secret that you have to figure out, that people like you, Marta, exist, and often, more often than not, people have to see people like yourself privately, if they can at all, because of what we've just heard about the NHS provision. But to get back to the actual issue, Marta, it can be incredibly upsetting for people, especially as we're talking about women here. I know men can be affected too, that they can't, that they can't bring this down. It's sort of hypertension.
Absolutely. The pelvic floor, it's very complex. You have a third of women that will experience some sort of problem in the pelvic floor in their life. But you're looking at around 25% of women will only come to our doors because it's the awareness. It's the taboo subject for both men and women, and they don't necessarily have the language to talk about it. But certainly, it's not just the language, it's the education as well. Some of these girls, men and women, they don't actually know how they're feeling the pelvic floor, whether it's normal or not. And as Dr. Maggie Blott said, that it can present itself in very different ways. Sometimes it could be anything from, you know, a fall in the coccyx when you're younger, or sexual trauma, sexual dysfunction can be the primary drivers. Obviously, you have your postnatal conditions as well. But with those prolonged holdings from anything from your endometriosis, your vaginismus, because you have a lot of inflammation and pain around these conditions, you can have the symptom of a high tone pelvic floor.
And away from seeing experts like yourself, physios that can sometimes be offered on the NHS, but more often than not don't seem to be, away from the physical manipulations, so where you're actually being massaged internally, there are breathing exercises that you can do, because usually when it's about the pelvic floor, as we say, it's about, you know, learning to be tight. So you imagine the lift going up is one of the visualization techniques I've heard. But with pelvic floor being the opposite, do you have to imagine the lift going down? Or are there any tips for anyone who's listening right now in this busy Christmas period who could help themselves relax while listening to the radio?
Absolutely. At the end of the day, I think it's imperative that you go to see women's health physio or a pelvic health physio if you're feeling any of these symptoms or any of these triggers. But sure, breathing is a fantastic tool we use in clinic. It can obviously increase your happy hormone, your blood pressure goes down, and that anxiety, that flight response where your pelvic floor can be overactive, it can help relax it. And I certainly, I ask some of the men and the women to imagine that their pelvic floor are almost on the penthouse lift. And as you inhale, you almost want the pelvic floor to drop down to that ground floor. And then you can imagine you're just about to start to pee. So you've got that inhale. As you inhale, the pelvic floor drop, and you slowly relax the pelvic floor out. And then you can exhale. Excuse me. And I tend to ask anything from 90 seconds to 2 minutes to do that twice, three times a day. But you just want to make sure that you obviously relax down, but you don't want to push or bear down. So you're just relaxing and opening up the pelvic floor and exhaling out then. So I tend to incorporate that into practice.
Martin said, I'm doing it as we speak. Dr. Maggie Block, final word to you.
Any form of relaxation is time well spent. The only thing I would say, if women develop new symptoms that they've not had before, that they should really go and see their doctor first and check out they've got no other serious conditions before going straight down for physiotherapy.
Yes, so to perhaps get that referral route as you often do.
Exactly.
With new symptoms. Yeah. Right, well, we'll all take a deep breath together during this period, which often can be very busy and stressful on a serious note, and people running around and doing all sorts of things. Thank you to both of you. Now, don't forget, if you ever miss a live programme, you can catch up by downloading the free BBC Sounds app and search for Woman's Hour. You may have missed our Boxing Day programme, which features some of the winning women from 2019. On that programme, you'll hear some wisdom from the writer Edna O'Brien, Khadija Mella, who won the Magnolia Cup at Goodwood and is now the Sunday Times Young Sportswoman of the Year, and the disability activist Sinead Burke. And for a video featuring all these wonderful women together, head over to the Woman's Hour Instagram page. And it is that time of the year, well, nearly, where we vow to be better versions of ourselves. On Monday the 30th here at Woman's Hour, we want to talk to you about habits. How do you build healthy habits, as well as breathing, of course, that you actually enjoy? How do you undo habits that have been bugging you perhaps forever? Phone lines will be open from 8 o'clock on Monday morning. The number that you need, 03700 100 444. That's 03700 100 444. But you can email your experience now via the Woman's Hour website. And if, like me, you've never managed, despite those New Year's resolutions, to stop eating bread, go to bed earlier and get into unbelievable shape, Heather McKee, a behavioural change specialist, is going to be on hand with evidence-based strategies and advice. I think I need her in my life day to day. Now, to our second visit to Northern Ireland's second city, Londonderry, which was the setting for the hit TV Channel 4 comedy Derry Girls. On Tuesday, we heard from a group of real Derry girls, the women who grew up there during the 90s when the series is set. They reflected on life there during the past year. Of course, the murder of the young journalist Lyra McKee by dissident Republicans, and also the ongoing Brexit process, which deeply concerns this border community. Today, it is time to hear from the teenage Derry girls. They talk about a range of issues, from changes to the law on abortion and equal marriage, to why Nadine Coyle's presence in the jungle on I'm a Celebrity made the hearts of the Derry teens swell with pride. Kathleen Carragher spoke to Tori, Sarah and Molly, all from St Mary's College in Derry, and Ellie Dean from the North West Regional College.
I'm Tori and I'm 17.
I'm Molly and I'm 18.
I'm Ellie and I'm 20.
I'm Sarah and I'm 17.
So tell me, what do you make of the TV hit, the Derry Girls programme?
Oh, it's brilliant. Sort of, it's just so Derry. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not like it's put on or anything, and you wouldn't look at it and be like, oh no, that's not the way we go on. No, it's definitely not the way we go on.
It's
like,
just so relatable.
It's just, right. You're always sitting watching it and you're like, I can feel it exactly.
You can see yourself doing it.
No, sometimes it can be over-exaggerated, but that's just like us, like as in like Derry. Derry exaggerates everything, so...
Do you like living in Derry?
I love living in Derry, particularly because of the amount of events it's on. You know, there's something different, music events, food events, like nearly every weekend. But at the same time, Derry does still have a lot of growing to do, I think, and it could definitely develop more to become a more peaceful place. But all in all, I love living in Derry.
Do you think that Derry is a less divided city between the two communities these days?
Compared to years ago, it definitely has improved and come a long way. But I guess there still is sometimes that divide between.
I think we have a lot further to go. Whatever area it is in Derry you're in, you know if that's a Protestant community or a Catholic community. You know the Catholic schools, the Catholic uniforms. If there's red, white and blue painted on the street, you know it's a Protestant community. Or, you know, there's marches. And it just sometimes... that like marching season and that bonfire season makes both communities feel so separate. And I think we should just get rid of all of that. I don't think there should be any tricolours or any green, white and blue painted anywhere, no flags. We need to move forward as one community.
Obviously this year Derry did make the headlines for the wrong reasons with the death of Lara McKee. What did you all feel about that?
It was terrible. I remember my mum coming in that morning and asking me straight away, did you hear about what happened in Craigan last night? But never did I think that someone was actually killed in Craigan that night. And the fact that it was such a young person and that she wasn't even involved in the conflict, she was just standing by, it was absolutely heartbreaking.
I'm from I live in Craigan, and I witnessed what happened, and we had the vigil for Lara the day after, and seeing the amount of people that came and supported and showed respect for it kind of just showed that there are people that need to maintain peace.
Do you remember the words of the priest at her funeral, Father McGill, that it was terrible that it would take the death of one young person to bring them together in the church, the politicians, and why could they not show some political leadership and get together?
But that's completely right. The fact that our political leaders are only willing to come together to show prayers and to show respect for that person, but they should be taking action as well. They should be in Stormont talking about ways to further Northern Ireland and to bring about more peace here. And although we're not in that era anymore, that doesn't mean that there aren't still threats and that there aren't still troubles in Northern Ireland today, because that is a testament that there definitely are.
It almost holds us back to when the troubles had started. I didn't even exist then, but I felt like I was back in that time.
Across the border very often?
I'm from Lufford, right on the border, of course, so I'd be down every couple of days visiting my daddy and my granny. So
no, not at all, because all my family live in Derry, so I wouldn't be down over the border at all. Like,
unless it's for petrol, we go across the border for petrol
because it's cheaper.
Yeah.
the dreaded B word, Brexit, does that, you follow the debate at all about Brexit?
That's all you ever hear is Brexit. Yeah. Every time I turn on that TV, Brexit, Brexit. Mm-hmm. The thing that concerns me is a majority of girls in my class are from Donegal. It is going to affect them, and it's going to affect their education, because they do come up to the tech and down again. You know, it's going to affect everyone, people's jobs as well from Donegal, who work up in Derry or Belfast or whatever. It's going to affect them.
Definitely. I think the most concerning thing about it would probably be the hard border or the soft border. Just being from Donegal and travelling down there so often to see my family, if there were a border put in place, I feel like it would be like a physical connection between us as well. And I think it would make them feel a lot further away. And then, of course, there's the question about transport and do buses, like you said, taking people up for their education, do they get to pass you know, without getting checked and then having to bring your passport with you in the morning just to get to work. It's crazy to think that we're taking such a huge step back if we do get a hard border. You know, our grannies and grandas would always talk about, I remember the checkpoints being there on the Lufford and Strabane Bridge, but you never actually thought that you could see that yourself one day. So it just feels like taking a massive step back, whereas we should be progressing and we should be making it a lot more accessible for people from the south to get an education and to work in the north.
Another big thing that happened this year was social change. Westminster legislated and has introduced same-sex marriage and abortion rights. Do you follow that debate at all?
I don't necessarily follow it, but I'm very happy with the change because it shows that we can progress as a community.
I'm the LGBT officer of the college, and you know, I was so happy when we got the change of equal marriage. I mean, it was one of the things we've been fighting for the past 50 years, and we finally got where we wanted to be. You know, we were all free. It's just what it just felt like. And now we have the right to get married to who we want to get married to.
Abortion, obviously. Is it something that would be discussed at school at all?
In GCSERE, you talk about it and you debate about it, and there was a lot of debate in the class. Like, oh, some people agree with it, some people don't agree with it. But at the end, like, that's your opinion. Like, mm-hmm. You can't force it on people.
I think regardless of what your stance is on abortion, there were women calling out for it. There were women that wanted it to be made safer. Because at the end of the day, if someone wants something bad enough, you know, they'll go overseas to get it, or they could get a backstreet abortion, and things like that can cause serious health problems. And I think it's just important that it opened up that discussion. I think it's definitely a step in the right direction that we're at least talking about it, regardless of what your stance is on it.
You know, and if somebody wants to get an abortion, well, that let them do it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to affect your life. I just don't think it's a big, well, it is a big deal for some people, but I mean, like, it's just, it's your body, your life. That's the way I see it, you know.
Now, one teenager who's made news headlines this year is Greta Thunberg. Mm-hmm. Have you interested in her?
Yeah, 100%. I think everyone our age is kind of following her at the minute just because she's so much younger than me, and she is...
Well, only 2 years.
Yeah, but she's out there doing these amazing things, traveling the world. And you just know that when we're older, our kids are going to be reading about her in the history books. And for one person, a teenager of all people, to make such an impact on global change, because no one else was having that conversation. None of the grown-ups were having that conversation.
Everywhere you looked on social media, it's always been like mm-hmm. focused on her. And for her to be able to make that change, like you said, it's... been amazing for
so inspirational.
Would you make any changes yourselves in your day-to-day lives then in terms of trying to help climate change?
One of the documentaries I've seen most recently was one on wet wipes and flushing them down the toilet. And this documentary was, you know, asking people, please don't flush them down the toilet, please dispose of them in the bins. And that's not really something I would think about normally. You know, you just wash your face before you go to bed. You just never really think about it. So it's programs like that would bring wee small changes about the house, and I think it's the small changes that are most important. You always hear people saying things like, oh, but sure, me making one difference isn't going to impact on a global scale. But if everyone in the world did something small each day, it would build up and it would definitely make a massive difference.
Next year, 2020, it's going to be a big anniversary in Derry for Dana. Do you know who I mean?
This is my first time hearing this.
Oh, me too.
Hi.
Has anybody got a phone on them? Do you want to get your phones out? So tap in Dana, all kinds of everything. Snowdrops and daffodils,
butterflies and bees. To win the Eurovision Song Contest at 18 is an unbelievable achievement, and I'm very surprised that I've never heard about her before, because that's unreal.
Just know that name, and that she was in Eurovision, because my mama has mentioned it to me once. But I don't think Dana is a look up to us for our age. Like, I think it's more Nadine Coyle these days, you know.
So tell me about Nadine Coyle then, why she's such a big hit.
Because she's just a Derry girl. She's just an ordinary Derry girl who's on everybody in UK's TV screen. We're just amazed by her. She's representing us very well. And yeah. I'm glad her accent hasn't gone.
And I mind that week that she was introduced in the show, there was this clip going around Twitter of her saying the word flyer. And everyone was like... Why is she saying flyer? Like, I don't know. I was sitting in the house watching the video going, flyer. Oh, that's right. Flyer, that's right. She just comes across as a very kind person. And the fact that she's in there with a Jenner is unbelievable. Like, someone from Derry is on TV show with a Jenner, a Kardashian. Like, that's unbelievable.
Although she said she's terrified of everything she's done, she's been, like, winning or, like, getting good things. So she's been really good. she is just a proper dairy girl, the way she talks and everything. Like, it's just the way we go on. She would be like a role model. She would be.
She's proven that you don't have to change for anybody. I don't know what is pushing me higher. It's a static from the floor
below. And then it drops and catches like fire. It's a sound. So just finally, tell me, what are you looking forward to in 2020?
Going on to university and studying. So I think that's a big thing for me to look forward to.
Saying goodbye to everybody in St Mary's as well and moving along. So it's kind of a bittersweet moment, but it's this new chapter in our life. So we're all very excited for it.
Becoming famous.
No, I'm joking. I have another year here in Derry yet before I go to university. Don't know where I'm planning to go to. I'm really am thinking about going away. Do new things as well. Start new things, you know, new challenges. Do well in my course. That's what I'm focused on.
I just hope this Brexit crack turns out well.
Kathleen Garriga there with Tori, Sarah, Molly and Ellie. Having to leave a child's bedside when they're being cared for in hospital is a huge wrench. It can be even more dramatic and difficult to do when that child is just a baby and a premature one at that. To help reduce the separation anxiety, a third of neonatal units in the UK are now using an app that helps parents stay in touch with their premature babies 24 hours a day. Doctors and nurses can send photos and video updates to parents when they can't be with their baby in hospital. So far, around 5,000 families have used the service. Catherine DaCosta has been looking into it, and Maggie Blott, Dr. Maggie Blott, who was with us just before, has stayed with us in the studio, of course, as a consultant obstetrician who can give some experience to this and how parents may or may not be able to cope at this time. Catherine, if I come to you first, at the moment 66 neonatal units have this system. What's the feedback been?
Well, yes, that's right. I've heard from several mothers that they feel this overwhelming sense of guilt at having to leave their baby in hospital. They say, you know, it's hard enough being a new mum, but then having to leave a child overnight can be really difficult. And it can make it harder for some parents to bond with their baby. But this app allows them to be sent pictures and videos 24 hours a day. And that gives parents a real sense of reassurance that their baby's in good hands and is doing well. Now, I met Victoria Redido. She and her husband had triplets at the Princess Anne Hospital in Southampton in August. Now, the boys were born 9 weeks early, and the youngest, Oscar, or the smallest, he was 1 pound and 9 ounces, less than a loaf of bread. Now, two of them were able to go home 5 weeks later, but Oscar had to spend an extra month at the unit. This is what Victoria told me about how the app helped her.
I remember getting the first photo and I was up at 3 a.m. expressing. And so you're awake all the time and you're looking at your phone, and then an email comes through and you get this lovely picture. And it usually has a message saying, "Hi, mommy, hi, daddy, having a lovely evening." You have to leave your babies and you feel so guilty leaving them. And to know that they're in such safe hands and with people who care enough to take a picture and just send it to you to make you feel good is amazing.
Why is this technology needed then? Because, of course, people have their own phones these days, don't they?
Yeah, well, I mean, lots of reasons why parents can't be with their baby. Victoria was able to stay in family accommodation on the hospital site, but she wasn't able to be there at the bedside overnight. Other parents might have older children to care for at home. I also heard a story about one mother who had heart problems during birth, and she was under the care of a cardiac team while her baby was in the intensive care neonatal unit. So they just couldn't physically be together. And it's not just parents, because grandparents and extended family might not be able to get to the unit and they want to know that everything's okay. So basically, staff can take photos and videos. As you heard there, sometimes they attach little messages, and it might be the baby's having a bottle, or, you know, it's having its first bath, or being taken off the ventilator for the first time. Just little updates. And the idea really is to help reduce separation anxiety. And many feel it helps boost mental well-being, not just for the mother, but for the whole family. And it's got the potential to help many families, because we know around 60,000 babies, that's about 1 in every 13, are born prematurely every year in the UK. Now, I was also speaking to Fiona Lawson. She's the matron in charge of the intensive care neonatal services at the Princess Anne Hospital.
We've always felt that that moment where the family have to leave us for whatever reason, and there's lots of reasons that might happen, that that is a wrench for families. And we do all we can to prepare them for that. But to be able to soften that blow by sending them videos, sending them photos, little messages, is really lovely for us to do.
Let's bring in Dr. Maggie Blott at this point. How important do you think this service could be?
I think this is a very important service. Separation of a mother from her baby at birth is one of the worst things that can happen. A sick baby being taken up to the neonatal unit and the mother being left down on the labour ward. And I've seen many the faces of many, many women as their babies are taken away from them. So anything that's going to bring them closer will improve outcome for mum and I'm sure for the baby. But better bonding, better breastfeeding, better family bonding as well. So I think this is a very important initiative.
I suppose also, though, it brings to mind that you're so busy in what you're doing and you and your teams. The idea that you're then also going to have to take photos and send these things. I mean, it should it just be seen as part of care?
This is definitely part of care. And we know now that the evidence is very strong in support of this type of initiative. In the old days, we used to take a little Polaroid picture that used to come back down from the neonatal unit, and that would be all that the mother had to look at. So anything now that that is relevant and keep women and fathers in touch with their baby much more often is very important.
To come back to you, Catherine, in terms of this being funded and how likely it is to be picked up by other hospitals, what do we know?
Well, it's not an NHS-wide app. Individual hospital trusts can choose to sign up to this, and it's paid for through sponsorship. So hospital charities would agree to fund it, and it costs roughly £3,000 to £5,000 a year per unit. And it means that it's then free for families to use. Now, as you say, it's already live in 66 units. Another 25 are expected to launch it over the coming weeks. And I should say that the difference between just using your personal mobile and sending it on your personal email, this is a secure app that's used on a hospital iPad. Pictures are encrypted, so they're not stored on the device. They're all stored on a remote server. And there are systems built in to improve security. So staff have to scan a barcode at the baby's bedside, and it means that the pictures will only be sent to that family. And it is supposed to be quick and easy for staff to use, so it's not taking up lots of time. So far it's helped 5,000 families, and the company behind it hope to be in nearly half of all units early in the new year.
And Dr. Maggie Blott, would you say to parents now, just as any advice as well about how to kind of mentally cope with being separated from your baby, anyone who's listening now, what would you say?
I would say get as much information as you can. Don't feel guilty about it. When babies are separated from their mothers, mothers often do feel a sense of guilt that they've done something that caused their baby to end up in the neonatal unit. And of course, that's not true. So a lot of reassurance about that. And just trying to keep in touch as much as possible.
It's just such a different experience, I imagine, from the one that you see on the films of bringing your baby home.
Yes. And the other thing is going home from hospital and leaving your baby behind is another very, very traumatic event for women. That's why I think being able to keep in touch like this would be a very good initiative.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. That was Catherine DaCosta, who's been looking into it for us here at Woman's Hour. Of course, if you've had experience, do let us know at BBC Woman's Hour. Perhaps you've used this technology. We'd really like to hear your story, and you can get in touch if you prefer by email on the Woman's Hour website. A big response to our discussion around the changes of the female roles within Star Wars. Anna has got in touch to say, I love Star Wars, but saying Han Solo sexually harassed Leia, oh my. Jabba the Hutt did, yes, but two people are allowed to be mutually attracted, and she objectified him too and spoke her mind from their very first meeting. So thank you for that one, Anna. Another one here is, what you failed to mention at Woman's Hour is the merchandise for Star Wars and Marvel. Often the female characters are left out of the T-shirts and the lunchboxes, etc. Well, thank you very much for flagging that to us. More of those comments on Twitter as well. We also had a response to our discussion around pelvic floor. Often when we talk about this, it's about it being too loose and urinary incontinence. But what about if it's too tight and it goes the other way? Lots of you out there feeling like you've had this experience and like it's some kind of secret. An anonymous message here. I'm so glad you're talking about this today. When I finally consulted a specialist physio privately, she told me my pelvic floor was in constant spasm. I'm on the road to recovery, but nearly 30 years of bladder pain and cystitis and constant apparent infections are now fading. I used a pelvic wand to relax my muscles. I suppose the big point here is if you feel like this is something you can relate to, even if you don't know all of the symptoms, it's very hard to articulate, do go and talk to a doctor. You're not imagining it. Something can be done. Join me tomorrow for Weekend Woman's Hour, where you'll be able to hear from Edna O'Brien, who's one of our winners of the year and joins us to discuss how winning the David Cohen Prize in her 89th year feels. As a week of ritual and traditions draw to a close, we explore the psychology behind those traditions and why it feels so comforting to do the same things year in, year out, and why it's actually very disturbing if you change anything. And after 100 years of women being allowed to practice law, we discuss just how much progress has been made and what's left to achieve. Cherie Booth QC and a host of female lawyers join us. We hope you will too.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.